Our number is 860-0850, pound 850 if you're a 360 communication customer. And our sponsors today are Computer Renaissance with two great area locations, one at Crossroads Shopping Center in Cary and the other at North Hills Plaza across from North Hills Mall. And by Mindspring. Find Mindspring, they're direct to the internet at www.mindspring.com or call them at 1-888-MSPRING. What's going on, Lair?
I don't know. We're still trying to get started.
Are you still...
What?
You're still getting organized.
I'm always still organized. That's fine. The problem.
We have a special guest in the studio.
We do. One of our old friends.
We sure do. Kevin Farini of... they still go to Cyrix, right?
Yes.
Whoops. Wait a second. Go ahead.
Well, it's not really...
Is this working?
We're having a problem here with the thing. Wait a second. Try now.
Hello? There he is. Yes.
I'm here.
Techno genius. I love it.
Yeah, we're now a division of National Semiconductor.
So is it still called Cyrix?
Yes. I mean,
okay. You're just a division of.
Right. And Cyrix is kind of a brand name now in National. We were merged back in November.
Does that mean more money?
For me?
Does that mean more headaches?
No, actually, it's a great marriage between two companies. Cyrix, as a $200 million fabless company, it was having to compete against a $25 billion Intel, and now we have access to our own technology within National, the $3 billion company, their own fabs, and they fix fundamental issues that we've had in the past.
Fabs. You're talking about...
I love it. Jargon inside.
Yeah.
The semiconductor manufacturing plant.
Right. Where they actually make the chip. So
yes.
Cyrix did not have the manufacturing facilities to do it before.
That's correct. We were essentially a design house, and we utilized IBM manufacturing to produce our parts.
Okay.
Is IBM still manufacturing any chips for you?
Yes. In fact, right now they are our primary manufacturer, and will be, I'd say, through this year, because we've had to transfer the design from, you have to translate it to National design rules, bring it up in the fabs, and so forth, and we'll be in production with National silicon second half of the year. So our capacity goes up dramatically. So we'll be able to build tens of millions of units, both at National and IBM. And one of the most important issues being that National is fully cross-licensed with Intel from a patent portfolio point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So that also means that we can build outside of the United States. We can build product in any fab in the country, in the world, and not have any legal jeopardy relative to Intel.
Wow.
What is that... Yeah, enlighten me here because, well, first of all, it's still dark in here. But that means that before you could not build outside the country?
Well, if you look at what it takes to compete with Intel.
It takes a lot of money and plants, but.
Well, the big companies that have large patent portfolios, instead of suing each other, what they tend to do is cross-license each other. Let's say, hey, we've got thousands of patents, and you may be violating one of them, and I may be violating one of yours. So they do legal deals that basically say we cross-license each other so that we don't sue each other.
Okay.
Now, Intel, and as a Cyrix employee for the last 7 years, if you go into production making an x86 microprocessor, Intel will sue you if you're not building product in a cross-licensed fabrication facility, whether there's any merits to it or not. Intel's got a lot of legal money and so forth because they'll simply work on the assumption that you probably are violating a patent.
Something they own.
And they'll just tie up in court.
And
National and Intel are fully cross-licensed, which basically means wherever National has subcontracting, National builds product at TSMC in Taiwan and other places. And now as part of National, we can actually transfer designs and use outside capacity if we desire to.
See, that brings up what you and I talked about briefly before, and that is, you know, all the press is about the Justice Department and Microsoft, which we'll get to in a while. But the real monopoly out there is Intel, and that's exactly what Kevin's saying, is that they're so big and so powerful that it's very difficult to compete against them on any kind of equal basis. I mean, what's their annual revenue? It's just
Intel's now a $25 billion company.
Yeah, I mean, most countries in the world don't have that kind of money.
Well, it's pretty amazing because I worked for Intel for 12 years and left in 1991, and they were a $2.5 billion company, and 6 years later at $25 billion. So it's certainly
been
doing something right.
We're talking with Kevin Farini of Cyrix. You're listening to Computers 98 on 850 The Buzz, and our number is 860-0850. Or pound 850 if you're a 360 communication customer. We pay for the call. Let's get away from all the statistics. I don't know how many people care about that, besides Larry.
Well, now, wait a minute.
Larry.
No, I just think that the interesting part, and forget about the statistics, is that we have in this country, we've been going on for some time now, an anti-Microsoft or anti-monopoly campaign in the computer business.
Yeah.
Which, be quiet, Emma. and several people, and I've seen this in press as well as, you know, I wonder about myself, several people are wondering, why hasn't Intel been at least talked about or investigated? Why hasn't some senator got a burr up their rear end about Intel like
they
do about Microsoft?
Well, because there is Cyrix and there is AMD, and, you know, and these are people that are doing exactly what Intel is doing. And it's fine. I mean, today you don't find anybody else who does what Microsoft does.
There's Sun and there's Mac. I mean, there are people doing it who make a lot more money. I think Mac's revenue last year was in the $9 billion range, even though they're
going out of business.
Well, I mean, they continue to shrink.
But you like to go out of business in style like that.
But I'm sure that AMD would like to have that kind of revenue. I mean, all I'm saying is that we as consumers are not benefiting from pressure being put on Intel. Our prices for processors are still very high.
Not necessarily.
They're still pretty high for what they cost.
Certainly, Intel processors.
Well, yeah, but they would be a lot higher if it wasn't for the other for Cyrix and for AMD.
But that's happened in the last year and a half or 2 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the longest time.
Being in the business, Larry, every time Intel came up with the new chip.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cyrix and AMD followed in their footsteps. The minute they introduced their chip, Intel's prices came down. They had to.
Well, no one said they were stupid.
Yeah. So it does help the consumer.
Yeah, it
but
does.
Nobody can come up with Microsoft Word that's a cheaper Microsoft Word. So Microsoft will lower their prices or will give in to other people.
I think he must be related to
the Intel. I think he's got the Intel virus or something today. I think it depends on how far back in history you want to go. When I was at Intel, you know, the 386 was ultimately down in the $20, $30 range. And when the Pentium came out, Intel changes the game. That's how they compete.
Uh-huh.
They make you go to new motherboards, new
printouts,
and so forth.
But they still do.
That's right. And then they ratchet the price up. And that's the way that they compete, is to change the game as opposed to compete on price. So, you know, when the 386 and 486 went by the wayside and they ultimately were $30, $40, $50 parts, the Pentium came out, Intel averages $200 a part. By the way, on a $15 cost.
Yeah, that's the one that got to me.
See, this is one thing that I'm still waiting to see if it'll happen. Back then, like 10 years ago, IBM was bigger than Intel, or maybe they still are, I don't know. I'm not into statistics. But,
yes, go ahead.
You can get that off.
So I can look at your smiling face.
IBM came up with the PS2. That's what they were trying to do, change the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it nearly pushed them out of the market, almost. I mean, that's what opened the door for people to start producing the clones on large scale, and companies started by. How long did it take him to get back to the ISA bus, the regular bus? It took years, and they were losing share. How come the same thing is not happening to Intel? Coming up with a Pentium 2, hey, you're going to have to change everything. There's no upgrading.
Right. You have to go to a new motherboard.
You have to go to a new motherboard. And I just, I don't know what Cyrix is doing, but I just heard AMD has a 266 socket 7 chip that somebody here in town has, and they say it flies. I mean, and they were talking, Cyrix and AMD were talking about keep on supporting the socket 7 processor, right?
For a single processor system, socket 7 is wonderful. Pentium 2 really only has benefits to a customer in a server or multiprocessor environment. With the Pentium 2, all of your costs go up. Motherboard's more expensive, Pentium 2 module's more expensive, and for a standard desktop PC, other than megahertz, there's really very little benefit on a Pentium 2 over Pentium.
So what is Cyrix's plans on
our plan is to continue in socket 7 and also to drive the low end of the market with Media GX and high integration. That's absolutely a major strength of National Semiconductor is the ability to integrate all the pieces of a PC into a single chip and get cost out of the devices and do it in high volume.
Many of you have probably watched on the news that all the local station anyway were talking about that it's going to be a lot cheaper and easier to buy a computer in 1999. And that's what they're talking about, that new computer that's all...
everything all in one?
Everything. The whole computer is on one chip.
Well, I think and Kevin was the first one. We were talking about this with this Media GX, 6 months ago?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Media GX is still a motherboard.
But here they're talking about, right?
No, there was more than one chip on that motherboard, right?
Well, there'll always be more than a chip. I mean, you have to have memories.
But I mean, here it's even more of an integration.
Oh yeah. If you look at the vision of National Semiconductor, they've got a new CEO 2-3 years ago, Brian Halla, who came from Intel and LSI Logic, and his vision was to pull all the pieces of a PC together via internal development as well as acquisitions. And if you look at what National Semiconductor has from a technology point of view, they have all the pieces. If you actually go through a motherboard and look at all the fundamental building blocks in a PC, National is far stronger than Intel, especially in the analog world, where you interface back to displays, to modems, to video, the audio. National's always been a very strong contender in the analog world. And then they've gone out and acquired the strategic core technologies that they've needed to pull it all together. They bought Cyrix, they bought MediaMatics, which is the foundation for MPEG-2 in Windows and so forth, and a couple other companies. And so the single-chip PC in the next year is going to be a reality, and National has all those pieces.
So, again, I mean, if the media GX is the GX board, the one that Compaq bought.
Right.
That wasn't a real tiny board. I mean, it was a board.
Oh, it can be as small as you want. Right now what you have are PC form factors, you know, baby AP motherboards. And on a Media GX, it's going to be a fairly unpopulated board, but, you know.
So where are they going with the new technology that everybody's talking about today? That's what I was asking. Is there more of the external support chips all combined into a single, really combined into a single?
Absolutely. National Semiconductor has a local area network technology, the video technology via MediaMatics, the microprocessor core technology with Cyrix, environmental management, you know, temp sensors and things of that sort. All of that stuff is going to ultimately be on a single chip.
It isn't, and I may be wrong here, but I thought that isn't on the Media GX box that Compaq made. The sound card, there was no sound card, there was no video card. This was all integrated into a single board with the processor.
That's correct.
So that you got rid of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it will continue to
accelerate. The first generation Media GX eliminated your video card and it eliminated your Sound Blaster card completely.
Yeah.
That cost of a PC has gone. And the Media GX has helped actually shift the entire PC industry. If you look at the volumes in the PC industry, and Intel's been blindsided by this, or maybe they just had their head in the sand. They didn't believe the sub-$1,000 PC market was real.
Right.
You know, 2 years ago, a sub-$1,000 PC was just a fire sale from excess inventory from a Packard Bell or whatever. They're getting rid of old technology. Now for $1,000, or now actually at $800, you get a fully functional PC. And a lot of that's driven by the competitors to Intel, Cyrix and AMD and
right.
the Media GX. And future iterations of the GX are just going to roll in more and more hardware, DVD, MPEG-2 decode, that sort of stuff.
Everybody's interested in faster and faster.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what speed Intel is working? I mean Intel. Cyrix is working on now as far as Socket 7?
On Socket 7, we just introduced our 266, XS86MX. Yeah. Yeah,
I'm saying here they have AMD. He didn't say a word, you know.
He's waiting.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we introduced that last month, and we're in a ramp-up phase right now.
Where do you think?
300 will happen probably in the June-July time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get that design up in the National Semiconductor Fabs in South Portland, Maine, we will shrink the silicon by about a factor of two. And that's one of the issues of being fabless.
There's nothing there yet.
It's one of the issues of being fabless. You have to design to generic design rules, mm-hmm. which makes your die bigger. And that's at the cost of megahertz. When you got a big die, you can't run it as fast. Now being part of National and having, you know, we own the fab. I mean, ours, Cyrix microprocessors are the most complex thing that National will build. They've given us the lead in their state-of-the-art fab in South Portland, Maine. Unlimited capacity there. We will drive that fab. And the next generation Socket 7 part and Media GX are going to production in that fab. And we'll cut the die size in half. And what comes out of there is lower power and significantly greater megahertz, better yields, better costs.
Okay, now, everybody that's buying motherboards today, the lowest voltage on it is 2.8.
Right.
Are these motherboards going to be able to support the 266 and maybe the 300? Are the voltages going down?
Ultimately, the voltages will go down. I mean, Intel with the Pentium 2 has had to drive the voltages down.
I'm not worried about them.
Yeah, and all that. And Socket 7, 2.8 is where it's going to be for the foreseeable future.
Okay.
What's going to happen, though, is the bus speed on the board is going to go up to ultimately 100 megahertz. To get performance, mm-hmm. you need to be able to feed the part. And,
that's always been the bus speed.
So that,
well, with the microprocessors, what you have is a bus speed and then an internal speed.
Right.
And so, you know, you may have 300 megahertz running around on chip, but if you're only feeding it at 66 megahertz, what you got are a lot of RPMs, but no drivetrain. And
so that's another reason why people today should not buy motherboards that cannot go up to 75, because 75 is still going to be.
75, 83, and ultimately 100. We have joined hands with AMD on 100 megahertz Socket 7 bus spec, and therefore the chipsets will come up. And, you know, as you get to 300 and 400 megahertz, you need to be able to feed the part.
Okay. Your calls are coming up next on the station. If you want to pay your rent or mortgage and your car payment, 850, The Buzz. And welcome back to Computers 98 on 850 The Buzz. We're talking with Kevin Farini of Cyrix /
National
Semiconductor.
National Semiconductor / Cyrix, probably.
Hey, it's my show. I say it any way I want. Please.
Excuse me. Until I get to the microphone button.
Uh-oh, geez. Now he's going to get me. Number is 860-0850, pound 850 if you're a 360 communication customer. We pay for the call. Feel free to call in and ask Kevin any question about the Cyrix and the National Semiconductor deal.
I did see, you know, when you first came out, there were some issues about heat and all this. That's all gone away, hasn't it? Everyone seems to be. I mean, most of the stores that I know in town who deal in computer parts, everyone's carrying a Cyrix chip now.
Mm-hmm.
So
Oh, they've been for a while.
Yeah. Well, a couple of them haven't for a long time. I mean, like, you know, there were a couple that didn't do it for a while. But, I mean, I see Cyrix chips everywhere now. So,
right. Well, and again, that's part of being a fabless company. When the first generation of chips were on, you know, if you actually look at IBM's technology, we were working on technology that was three generations behind their state-of-the-art technology. That's what they gave us access to. Mm. And that's at a cost of higher power, bigger transistors, right. The whole thing. And being part of National gives us access to the state-of-the-art billion-dollar fabs that National's built. And what that means is really low power, very small transistors, cutting the die size in half. Nothing but benefits.
Yeah, plus you guys get to work with the fab experts,
right?
Who are on your team now.
Yeah, and that is a big difference between being fabless and having your own capacity is that when you're fabless, you design to generic design rules.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is that your design is going to be bigger, so you can move it from fab to fab,
right,
depending upon what deals you have in the works. When you have captive capacity, you can relay out those designs to take advantage of the design rules of the fabs, and the die shrinks. It's magic, and the megahertz happens. So it's just great benefits to being part of National Semiconductor.
I always thought the fabulous was a good word.
Abs.
Yeah, there it is.
Like pecs.
Well, and I guess the other thing, it's a very a synergistic a marriage between the two companies. National does business with all of the major PC manufacturers in the world.
Oh, yeah, they're right.
You know, large business with Compaq, IBM, Dell, everybody. So it makes it that much easier to do business with the big guys.
Yeah. You're not out there trying to sell something to the big guys without injury.
Well, you know, the $20 billion company feels more comfortable buying product from, you know, the $5 billion National instead of the $200 million Cyrix.
Very good.
Wally?
Yes?
So what happened with Microsoft this week?
I was showing Kevin before we came on the air. I picked up a... What's happening with Microsoft is that they're still in deep doo-doo with the DOJ and the Department of Justice is now looking into a new lawsuit against them or a new injunction about Windows 98. But what I thought, I came across an article in the New Yorker this week, which is actually from the March 16th New Yorker, and it's on Scott McNeely. And Scott McNeely is, for those of you who don't know, Scott McNeely. He's the head of Sun Microsystems. A bitter rival of Bill Gates and Microsoft. In fact, the title of the article is McNeely, the Sun King, How Scott McNeely Became the Anti-Gates.
The anti.
And what is really interesting about this and why I recommend this article to people is that it gives you a better insight into exactly why things happen the way they happen out in the Silicon Valley, and that is the alliance, the anti-Microsoft movement that's going on in the Department of Justice just didn't happen. It happened at the insistent prompting of a lot of people, like Scott McNeely, who's one of the leaders, Larry Ellison, who's the head of Oracle, who's another anti-Gates. These are people who have spent time and money working the political process to get and working politicians like Orrin Hatch from Utah, who is known as Senator Novell also. Somebody else who... probably doesn't like company doesn't like Gates, but that this stuff is going on out there for reasons that have very little to do with technology or business practices. It has to do with who's trying to make more money than whom and who's annoyed at whom. And it's very interesting. I mean, Microsoft doesn't come off unscathed here. There are some of their people, but
it sounds like he is getting a little bit scared. He's running a little scared.
Who, Bill?
Yeah.
Well, what they've done this week is come out with some ads, which I thought were funny. I mean, Dave in the golf show before us was telling
Dave, about
Bill Gates as the playing golfer geek. Yeah, right.
You see, he's trying to make money from commercials now. I mean, commercials.
I don't think he took any money for this. I think there was a story that he refused to take any money, but he just wanted to show himself as a regular guy, which is hard to imagine because he's sitting there with his golf clubs and he can buy golf clubs. He can buy golf courses.
Gold-plated and...
But... they've come out with an advertising campaign to show that they're just plain folks, you know, that they're in the market for innovation. Kevin's laughing because he knows better. This is a huge company, and it's very aggressive. But what I want to see is at least a balanced approach to this and people's understanding. And this article does a good job because it shows you that, as I say, there's a lot of effort being put in, deliberate effort being put in on the part of Microsoft's rivals to make sure the Department of Justice investigates them, including sending white papers to DOJ pointing out ways in which Microsoft should be stopped. And that's come up a number of times. So, you know, floating around the Washington and the legislature and the Department of Justice are papers saying why Microsoft is bad and how we should stop them, and they're written by Microsoft's competitors. Somehow or another, that doesn't seem to me to be the way the things are supposed to work, but that's the way they work.
You're listening to Computers 98, the 950 device.
I was just amazed. This is a very good article. I recommend it because it has insight into not only McNeely and Ellison, but all the cast of characters that play this soap opera out there. I don't know.
It is a soap opera.
Oh, it's like better than General Hospital.
I don't know. I don't watch it.
I don't either, but my daughter does. So.
Our number is 860-0850, #850 if you're a 360 communication customer.
So that's happening. What else is happening? I want to say hello to Doug from Stay Online. I was out there yesterday. That's a good store.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I actually did something that will shock you. I haven't told you this yet. I bought Linux.
Wait a second. Let me see.
I installed Linux on one of the drives of my laptops.
Linux. Yeah, whatever.
Red Hat Linux. Because I got tired of Windows for a while. And wanted to get to an operating system.
To a real operating
That's
system.
That's right. And we can talk about Linux for a long time in the future. I'd like to have someone on it because Red Hat Software, which is the company that at least is distributing it, is a local company. They're out in RTP. And the basis of this operating system...
They're not just distributing it. They actually have a hand in the operating system itself.
Yeah, everybody does. And that's one of the nice things. You can write pieces to the software and post it to sites and get it. But, so I did that. I mean, so on one drive of my laptop, I've got Windows 98 beta. And on the other, I have Linux. Now, this is like the Mad Hatter Tea Party of computer operating systems.
That's okay, but it's, you have
to... Sounds like
that.
The scene from Mission Impossible where smoke comes out of the tape
player. I know. What do you see? Something's going to happen.
Yeah, that poor electrons.
But... One of the things that came up yesterday at Stay Online, I met several nice people hanging around. It's a nice geek hangout. We were talking about Logitech mice and Windows NT and the fact that these IntelliMice don't work on NT, all three buttons. And there was a gentleman there who says they do or has worked on his, and we were talking about why and why they wouldn't. And to the best of my knowledge, all those mice drivers... Our DOS drivers, 16-bit DOS drivers, they load in DOS. You can't do that on NT. NT is a 32-bit operating system, and you cannot load. In fact, Microsoft doesn't even allow their own, doesn't even have their own product that can load on NT.
You mean they don't have the driver within NT?
They have a driver in NT, but they do not have a Logitech driver in NT, or they do not have an IntelliMouse driver in NT.
That's what I'm talking about. IntelliMouse.
No. They say that in their website. So it was just. There's all kinds of things floating around like that out there. And this guy says, like you were talking about, Kevin, about making a machine work by magic. He says, they all work on my machines. I got 3 or 4 NT machines with AutoCAD, and all the buttons work. Well, they don't really. I mean, the 3 buttons do, 2 buttons work. But it's just the incompatibilities and all. So.
Well,
if it was easy, they wouldn't need us.
I guess that's true.
John, good morning. You on 850 The Buzz.
Yeah. I heard you guys talk about the Socket 7. Was really good for single processor systems.
Okay.
I am interested in buying a new motherboard, and I'd like to go with a dual processor system. And I thought maybe I could still remain in the Socket 7 world. So is that the case or not?
There are motherboards out there that support dual Pentiums. Excuse me. I think that if you're going to be in a dual processor environment on Socket 7, you're probably limited to Pentium.
Yeah.
Because of the multiprocessing. There's an interrupt controller and some patents associated with it, and we just don't support that feature.
Awesome. Okay.
But, you know, Intel has done dual processor Pentium Socket 7 boards.
for some time now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen them. I've also wondered, since you don't support that, I hope you can still answer this question. This is my final question. How closely matched do you have to get the CPUs? I thought it was just a matter of getting the same speed, but I was told that you have to get the manufacturing dates, the two CPUs, within a certain time so that they're more evenly matched.
Manufacturing dates between what, a Pentium and an AMD or a Cyrus?
No, the two Pentiums that you're going to put in the dual processor system. See, I was saying, well, I've got one 200MMX. I just go out and buy another 200MMX and then put it in a motherboard. And I was told, well, the thing is, your one is older and it may not match that well with a newer 200MMX.
I wouldn't worry. In the MMX world, Intel probably hasn't done that many steppings. I would tend to agree with the statement of if you had a really old Pentium.
Okay.
And then you were looking at a new Pentium, there could be years difference. And the only issue that could be coming up here would be if you've got wildly different stepping revisions. You know, if you go under the covers of a Pentium or an AMD or a Cyrex, you'll find that there are multiple steppings that occur in the life cycle of a part. And typically they're yield enhancements, but sometimes they're bug fixes. And so I think your friend is probably warning you that if you got a really old stepping and you try to match it up with a new stepping, there could be an issue on the hardware interconnect. But Pentium with MMX is only a year old from Intel, so I tend to say that's probably not an issue.
I've seen the steppings. I've always wondered what that was.
It's
but now I think you've explained it. It's just a rev for a.
It's just revisions, you know. There are a lot of under the cover things that you do to enhance yield, to fix things that are transparent to users, and those are called stepping revisions. Some of them are major, some of them are completely functionally transparent, where they don't actually impact the functionality, but they're just enhancing yield or you know that sort of thing.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a bunch. That makes a lot of sense.
Thanks for calling 850 The Buzz.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too.
Thanks.
This is what I call going a little bit overboard when people say you have to match the dates and everything, you know, to go for it. Although, I mean, it is possible that somebody would buy something that there was a major revision and he bought his CPU.
Mm-hmm.
Today and tomorrow is buying another one that's already a mess. It's fine, but
at this point,
it.
You know,
if it doesn't
when
work,
you're dealing with a Pentium that's 3 or 4 yeah. years old,
yeah,
you know, the bugs are worked out. You're dealing with new technology. If you're trying to match up, you know, an old Pentium 75 with something,
with a 200,
then you know you're talking about wildly different devices, which
yeah.
actually you couldn't do anyway.
You tuned to Computer Design 8 on 850 The Buzz. Larry?
No, I was just thinking about operating. There was a question that I read somewhere about operating system, about NT and dual processors and how they really have a problem. Some combination of dual processors and motherboards, NT doesn't support real well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what
ones
they were.
I have to tell you a story. I was at WinHack in Orlando 2 weeks ago. It's a Microsoft hardware engineering conference, and Gates does have a sense of humor. They played a video of him and Steve Ballmer in kind of a Yugo driving down the road to this Volkswagen tune. And they're basically picking up garbage. You know, people would have put out things on the curb. So they find an old sofa, an old chair, they stick it in the back. They find an old Sun workstation, they put it in the back. And they're driving down the road, and then they both look at each other, look in the back seat, see the two things. And the next scene, you see, they put the Sun workstation back out on the curb, and they're driving down the road with the old ratty sofa in the back. That was funny.
There was no dog in the back. That's
You mean one of those little bouncy dogs?
Get a Taco Bell.
So does this say what? Is this a comment by Bill on what he thinks about Sun workstations? Maybe?
Well, you know, they're trying to pound on him, and you know, he has a sense of humor, and he's a good businessman, and you know, I think ultimately he wins.
We don't have the CD, do we, John?
The winner takes it all.
Yep.
We don't have the CD here, do we?
I think what they're doing is teaching him how to dress better and shave and, you know, be a little more politically correct and so forth.
They certainly are trying to dress him up a little.
All right, your calls are coming up next on the station. You want to pay your rent or your mortgage and your car payment, 850 The Buzz. Welcome back to Computers 98 on 850 The Buzz. Our number is 860-0850, pound 850 if you're a 360 communication customer. I'm Amnon, your host here with Larry Dial.
Good morning.
And in the studio, we also have Kevin Farini of Cyrix / National Semiconductor, if you don't mind, Larry. And we're talking about about everything, really. Tell you what, Good morning, Steve. You're on 850 The Buzz.
Hi. Yeah, as long as you've got the chip guy there, I...
The chip guy? Oh, what flavor would you like?
Hello, Mr. Chips.
I thought I'd ask why they don't put a really large amount of cache RAM on the processor, or else make it where your main memory actually plugs into the processor and get around this bottleneck on the motherboard.
You're exactly right. Deepening the on-chip cache gives you the absolute biggest payback in terms of improved performance, and that happens to be the fundamental difference between our 6x86 and our 6x86MX. We went from a 16K cache to a 64K cache and then added the MMX instructions. From a performance point of view, big cache is good, and plus the memory hit in terms of die area is not that significant.
Not a 64K, but
right.
Talking 4 meg or something.
Well, you run into an issue in terms of you run into a land of diminishing returns where if you get the cache to a certain level, the hardware associated with doing the cache lookup actually ends up slowing down the core.
Right.
So there's a trade-off in terms of how big you can go before you actually start to slow it down.
It's having a disk cache. If it's too large.
You know, it's having to do a cache lookup, and it's got to go through more and more hardware as you put more and more cache memory on board. Now, the alternative to that, in terms of once you hit, an optimal cache size of 64K or perhaps a little bit bigger, is to actually put the second level cache that's normally on the motherboard onto the silicon.
Right.
And in fact, AMD is talking about that now for their K6 3D or whatever their next generation part is. And I think ultimately we'll do the same thing. Now, the second part of your question in terms of having a direct access to memory is exactly what we do with the Media GX part. We have the memory controller built on chip. So you hook up your EDO DRAMs or your SDRAMs directly on a private bus into the Media GX because the memory controller is inside of the microprocessor.
Is it like having a backside bus to main memory?
Yeah, you could think of it that way. Not particularly in the same way that the Pentium 2 is, but it's a private bus out to its own memory. And the PCI interface is on a completely different set of pins and so forth on the Media GX, so it owns its own memory. You know, 4 meg, however many meg you have in your system.
There's a trick that goes way back to the early days of DRAM that I've been asking all around town, and I haven't been satisfied that I was really getting a straight answer. And it's a RAM bank interleave. As a method of speeding up access.
Well, that's typically how the memory banks work on a Pentium, Intel Triton chipset and so forth. Is there are banks of memory?
So four meg SIMs would be faster than one 16 meg SIM.
Well, it's the way that the part addresses where it's putting out an access into one bank, and while it's doing the access, it's got the address going out to the other bank, and you're basically overlapping. There's a certain amount of setup time to actually get an address into the DRAM and out.
Yeah,
and the interleaving occurs as a natural course of how Intel wanted the chipsets to be designed. And in fact, I think in most Pentium at least in the Intel Triton chipsets, I believe that you have to do your SIM modules in pairs because of this.
You do.
Well, also because they're only 32 bits wide and you need 64 bits for the processor. But that's not, I wouldn't call that bank interleaving. That's putting them in parallel. Whereas the interleave that I was talking about is like, well, if you have, you know, four 60 nanosecond banks, you could actually get data from them in a round robin fashion every 15 nanoseconds.
Hmm.
Well, I don't think you get that kind of throughput, but in the interleaving, you are you're basically accessing the second bank while the first bank is delivering data, and so you are hiding some of the access time into the memories.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you which motherboards do that, but that's a standard design practice with the chipsets.
There are some motherboards that do that.
How do you tell?
But in the BIOS.
Does it actually say interleaving?
Yeah, I've seen some that talk about interleaving and always leave it at the default because it's just like you say, the information out there is not available. If you're tinkering, you can go in and look at it and crash it and do whatever you want, but I find out, leave it alone, and it works the best.
Well, you know, I just thought I'd bring it up because it's a very old technique. They used to have, you know, like eight-way interleaving and stuff on early medical equipment because they had, you know, because the DRAMs were 250 nanoseconds and stuff.
It's right. It's something, anything that back then you could get speed out of, you could. But, you know, like today, I have a customer that asked me to put SDRAM instead of the
EDRAM?
No, SDRAM. Synchronous.
Oh, yeah, instead of EDRAM.
Because it is faster. And, well, it's supposed to be, yeah. I mean, it is under a laboratory test.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when you're talking the difference between 60 nanoseconds and here you bring up 15 nanoseconds, come on. You know, what are we seeing as end users?
Well, okay, but you know. You know, if you do the math, you'll see that 60 nanoseconds is only about 15 megahertz. So if you talk about your processor, you know, is running... you know, 200 or 300, and your motherboard's running 66 or 75 or 100 or something, and the memory is only running 15. You know,
what
bit of a problem there?
And what does it run? You do the math. What does it run at 15? At 15 nanoseconds, at 25 nanoseconds, whatever.
25 nanoseconds would be
roughly. Come on.
40 megahertz, and 15 nanoseconds would be about 60 megahertz. But of course, this is only the access time, and it's actually a little more complicated than
in
that.
In practicality, we don't see much of an end result, and that's my point.
Mm-hmm.
Under lab conditions, yeah, you're going to be able to see it.
This is the overall argument for having an on-chip cache because it doesn't matter how fast the DRAMs are. When you have to go off board, it's an eternity to the microprocessor.
And maybe the hard drive is slowing things down so much.
That's even worse.
That really is worse.
Yeah, we're talking milliseconds.
Because the fastest hard drive is 1,000 times slower than the slowest memory.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, right. Steve.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling 850 The Buzz. All right. That's an interesting. That's going deep into it.
And that's also why at WinHack 2 weeks ago, Microsoft was saying you really ought to be thinking about having 64 meg in your machine this year.
That's what they're recommending for Mac.
Going into the future with Windows 98 and ultimately the integration between Windows 98 and
Internet Explorer
and NT.
Oh, ultimately, yes.
Ultimately, those guys will merge, and I assume there'll be one product a couple of years from now.
Yeah. You're listening to Computer Design 8 on 850 The Buzz. The number is 860-0850, pound 850 if you're a 360 communication customer. We pay for the call. The DIMMs go into the motherboard as one you can put one module. But you're right, Kevin, they put two because of the interleaving and because of the 64.
Mm-hmm.
There are some motherboards, some earlier motherboards, Pentium motherboards, that came out. They didn't last long, but I'm sure that they're still out there that required, you could put one SIM, so you could put one 16 and you had 16 meg.
Right. That depends on the chipset. I think Intel Triton chipsets, you never could do that with some of the other chipsets for Pentium. They would allow that, but then it's just it's really going to slow down the machine.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, that's when memory was expensive.
Right.
That would have been that was a good thing to do. When memory was expensive. Do you feel old, Larry?
Very old. Jeez. I'm feeling dim right now.
1 megabyte of SIM, 30 PM, 70-some bucks. Look at it now. Look at it now.
I mean, we all, unfortunately, we're all old enough that we can tell horror stories about what stuff used to cost and what you used to think was a lot.
Yeah.
And, when 640K was just an immense amount of RAM.
And you had to write in assembly code.
That's right.
Kevin, we have like about a minute and a half before we have to break away. Let me ask you something real quick. If you take the M2 233 and you take the Intel 233, what happens with the math code? I know that the math code was slower on the 6X 150s and 200s, and you explained back then why. What happens today? I mean, was there any work done on the math code?
Well, on this present generation, it's the same Mathco processor. It is faster. So we run internally. We're running a little bit slower clock speed on the chip. You know, in most work that you're doing, you'll never see a difference in terms of benchmarks and so forth. So it really doesn't come into play. Some of the really intense, games. 3D games and so forth. It is where you would see, some differences and so forth.
It's still there?
Well, the next generation part beyond the Media GX and the 6X86MX, actually those two product lines are going to merge, where the Media GX is going to get the next generation microprocessor core from the 6X86MX, and you're going to get an order of magnitude higher performance, and the floating point unit is going to be significantly enhanced.
Okay.
And that'll happen in the second half of this year.
All right. Okay, your calls are coming up next on the station. If you want to pay your rent or mortgage and your car payment, 850 The Buzz.